And this is KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06. It's Tuesday, November 18th. 33 degrees currently in Old Town Park City and 36 degrees in Heber Valley. We've got a little bit of clearing happening here outside our weather window. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at partly to mostly cloudy skies as we go throughout today. Expect some sunshine, but there will be some clouds in the sky. Temperatures will climb only into the upper 40s for us in Park City as we go throughout this afternoon. High temperatures will only be in the low 50s for us in the Heber Valley. We will have a very slim chance of a spotty shower sneaking up from the south as we go throughout this afternoon. But again, I expect most of us to stay dry as we go throughout the rest of your Tuesday. Now, as we move into your Wednesday, look for those clouds to continue to thicken up. We'll call it mostly cloudy skies as we go throughout your Wednesday. Temperatures start off right around the freezing mark. We'll see those highs climbing back into the mid to upper 40s in Park City. Highs will be in the low 50s in the Heber Valley. There's a slightly better chance of a few spotty showers expected across the area as we go throughout your Wednesday afternoon. Again, not expecting any heavy precipitation, but a chance of a valley rain shower, mountain snow shower that could roll through your neighborhood. Otherwise, as we get towards the end of the week, we'll be looking at partly to mostly cloudy skies for your Thursday. Very similar temperatures, highs in the upper 40s. Highs in the low 50s in the Heber Valley with those partly to mostly cloudy skies and a very slim chance of a spotty shower. That pattern continues into your Friday. Highs in the mid-40s for us in Park City. Highs around 50 in the Heber Valley with, again, just a slight chance of a spotty valley rain or mountain snow shower. But, again, no major precipitation expected here as we go throughout the rest of the week across the Wasatch Back. Just slight chances of spotty showers rolling through the area. The upcoming weekend is looking perfect out there with mostly sunny to partly sunny skies across the area for your Saturday and Sunday. We'll see those high temperatures in the mid to upper 40s in Park City for Saturday and Sunday, and high temperatures will be into the low 50s for us in the Heber Valley. Now, keep in mind, it will be a little cooler, so morning lows Saturday and Sunday morning will be down into the 20s as we start off the weekend mornings. As we head into next week, we start off with dry skies, partly cloudy skies, and highs right around 50. That's a look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybell. We'll preview this week's county council meeting. Later on, Park City Board of Realtors Philanthropy Foundation's Janelle Jacobson with details about this week's Park City Turkey Drive and how you can participate. And finally, Recycle Utah Operations Manager Troy Holding, joined by Community Outreach Manager Chelsea Hafer with the latest from the Recycling Center. The tight race for Park City Mayor just got even closer. Candidates Ryan Dickey and Jack Rubin are now only 7 votes apart. That's a margin that would allow Rubin to request a recount. The latest election results were released last night. They show Dickey has 1,706 votes, Rubin with 1,699. That's a difference of just 0.2%. Under Utah law, the losing candidate can request a recount within 3 days of the canvass if the race is decided by 0.25% of votes or less. Park City scheduled to make the election results official at 4:30 this afternoon. Rubin told KPCW earlier he wanted to wait before commenting on the latest numbers. In a statement, Dickey said he's incredibly excited about the results and grateful for the community's support. In a statement, he said, "My opponent is entitled to request a recount, and we will, of course, fully respect the decision should he request one. We remain extremely confident in the accuracy of the count," he added, "as well as the professionalism of the Summit County Clerk's Office and the strength of our election system." Last week's preliminary results had the candidates 11 votes apart. Since then, election officials have counted 14 additional Park City ballots with signatures that initially could not be verified. The process is known as curing. Summit County Clerk E. First said Monday night that her office had just one uncured Park City ballot left. The Wasatch County Council meets tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock in work session. On the phone with a preview of the meeting is County Manager Dustin Graybell. Good morning, Dustin.
Good morning.
First up, a presentation for the county's solid waste department's budget for next year. There's no report in the meeting agenda, so should taxpayers expect fees to go up here?
No, we're not asking for any additional fees. It's kind of business as usual. We have some natural growth just related to new residents that we're reflecting in some changes in the budget. But other than that, it's pretty normal.
Okay. Well, Summit County facing the expensive reality of having to add another landfill cell. The hope by removing food waste will only help reduce climate change, but save room in the expanding landfill. What's the status of your landfill? I mean, do you need to replace it soon or add another cell?
Yeah, so Wasatch County partners with Duchesne County at the Blue Bench landfill that's out kind of on the borders of the two counties out South Highway 40. We actually made a change in Wasatch County a few years ago where we diverted construction and demolition waste, and that's saved us a lot of space in our landfill. And so right now our projections are that we're set for the next several decades.
Okay. So where is the construction waste being taken?
So there are local private waste streams, I believe ACE and others that are taking the construction demolition waste. So it's like concrete and metal and wood and things like that that wouldn't degrade naturally anyways.
Mm-hmm. So, and where's that being hauled to? Just wherever they take theirs?
Yeah, they have a transfer station, I think somewhere down in Utah County, and a landfill out over there as well.
Well, those transportation costs must be huge. I mean, driving to Duchesne or near Duchesne, I mean, that's a good hour away, no?
Yeah. It is, you know, not the closest landfill, but I think it's something that we are able to do with the existing rates and one that we're in a good financial position. We are looking at, in the long term, what a new transfer station looks like in the Heber Valley, but that will still be leading to the Blue Bench landfill. That's kind of out there as a little bit of a way.
Yeah. At some point, Wasatch County was hauling stuff to the Hennifer landfill in Summit County. That stopped?
Yeah. To my knowledge, at least in the recent past, we've been using this Blue Bench landfill that we've partnered with Duchesne on. There was previously kind of an unregulated landfill underneath what is now the Heber Airport, but that predates, I think, kind of modern best practices when it comes to landfills.
All right. Also, we'll get an update from the assessor's office on the Board of Equalization efforts this year. How's that going?
I think they're nearing completion, so that we're on track to much better than we have last couple years. There's been a lot less appeals, I think primarily just because values haven't changed as dramatically since we gained so much ground over these last few years on making sure that our values were up to date.
All right. Council also scheduled to have its first reading of an ordinance that would enact a county records management and data privacy program to comply with the state law. So what does this do?
So this is a requirement of state code that all public entities are required to do by the end of this year. Counties, right now, we're working with UAC to pass this ordinance that would basically ensure that we are taking steps towards the state's data privacy program. This is an unfunded mandate from the state, but one that we feel like is important to make sure that we're protecting our clients' and constituents' data. And the ultimate goal is to have a lot more transparency on what data we're collecting, how we're using it, and to ensure the public that we're properly disposing of it.
All right. Well, the ordinance is also set for possible approval tomorrow. Is that in order? Don't you usually bring it back for a second reading?
Yeah, I think that one ended up getting mislabeled. We actually did a first reading a couple weeks ago, and so it should have been a second reading. So that's something we'll have to discuss.
All right. Let's see. There was also a discussion with regard to the general plan update on land use scenarios. Any surprises here?
I think it'll be an interesting discussion. So that's really what this is really four different scenarios of if we assume a certain amount of density, what are these four different scenarios in which this density could happen in Heber Valley? And so there are more clustered options, more distributed options. And so it's really intended to drive some discussion with the council for our general plan update to see what the direction we get from the Planning Commission and from the council is on how to accommodate growth, if at all, and where those areas make sense to do it.
All right. One of the maps shows the Northfields as a preservation area, a new zone, in scenario B. So what does this mean compared to the agriculture very low density zone in scenario A, which is the existing plan?
Yeah, so I don't know that we have the answer yet in the details of what that looks like. We're kind of still at a higher level rather than You know, we're not writing code for new zones yet. We're kind of getting general direction of if the council would like us to take a step back from or raise standards to ensure that it's even better protected than it is now. And that's the type of discussion that we're hoping to have with them. There are competing interests here, you know, in that there are private property owners who own property out there, and they might have opinions on how their land is used and what the future potential is. And so that's all part of the discussion of what do we feel like is the best for the county overall and balancing those competing interests.
Mm-hmm. Any idea if there is a preferred scenario at this point? As you mentioned, four options.
Yeah, I don't think we've discussed this with the council yet. This came from, I believe, four different focus groups that kind of gave input on different scenarios. And so I think they're really just kind of theoretical. Hey, let's talk about what these each look like and what you like or don't like about each of them.
All right. And at what point, I mean, I think you and I have talked over the months, you know, that this would be decided on by the end of the year, or are we pushing it into the new year?
I think we've always kind of assumed it was going to be about an 18-month process to do our general plan. So we're in the thick of writing it up. So we expect it to continue into next year. And then from there, about mid-year next year, we should be about complete with the general plan update. And then begins the code rewrite, which is kind of the next layer down of additional detail and the implementation of the direction from the general plan.
All right. At 6 o'clock, four public hearings are scheduled. Anything you want to highlight that you think listeners will want to know about here?
I think most of those are kind of normal development process things. There's one code amendment that we had some discussion a few weeks ago, and that is making some changes to our street lighting standards. We have been looking at ways of reducing the amount of light that is required in unincorporated developments in Wasatch County. We discussed with the council a potential proposal that would have reduced it some by requiring lights in certain places and not in others that we have previously. And this new proposal, the direction from the council then was, is can we do less and ensure that we're still being safe? And that's ultimately what this recommendation is to do as little as is necessary in terms of lighting so we can protect our dark skies as much as possible.
Okay, let's see. Council will also get another budget presentation. The draft budget for 2026 includes an estimated $129 million in expenses. Of that, nearly $19 million earmarked for the Wasatch County Sheriff's Office. The Sheriff's Department is requesting an additional $2.2 million increase. Will Sheriff Rigby come to the council himself to discuss his department's need?
Yeah, we've already met with him to kind of explain some of the discussion we had last week when we had a little bit more in-depth discussion. So we presented the tentative budget 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. We discussed it in more depth this last week. And then based on the feedback from the council, Sheriff Rigby will be coming to speak to some of what his requests are. And I expect we'll discuss some other items related to the budget as well for 2026.
All right. So is there money or are there revenues to be able to meet his requests?
Yeah, so what we presented in the tentative budget is a balanced budget that doesn't require any additional taxes to be able to cover. So the things that we've proposed are things that we can fund, we can afford. It really comes down to the policy priorities, and that's the discussion that we want to have. And one that I think that we may end up discussing is, you know, around service levels and what does it look like? Because everything is, you give a little, you get a little, right? Of how much do you want to pay for what service level, and are what we spending the money on, does that align with what the council thinks are the highest priorities based on the recommendations from the sheriff's office? So for instance, you know, we have a need for additional dispatchers just based on our call volumes growing up from growth across the county. I think that one's really well justified, but some of the policy considerations that we're looking at is we are receiving an increasing number of concerned citizens who want better speed enforcement. But that's because of the rapid growth in our community and the limited resources we've had. We haven't had the resources, I think, to be as responsive as the sheriff would like to be. So that's the policy discussion that I think we'll have of, you know, why this and not that, and ensuring that we're setting ourselves up for success in the future.
Yeah. In addition to the dispatchers, how many employees has the sheriff's office lost in 2025 that it might need replacing?
I know we have a number of vacancies. I don't know it off the top of my head. I think it's single-digit vacancies still. What some of these new positions would do, though, is we don't have any vacancies in the dispatch center. These are new positions. These are additional positions, so that we can make sure that we aren't relying on overtime to cover some of these gaps and ensuring that we are able to provide an adequate level of safety and support for our community.
Employees that the sheriff's office has lost in 2025, you mentioned single digits, they'll all be replaced. Is that the plan to maintain at least current service levels?
Yeah. I know that the sheriff, I think they made offers. Again, we made changes to the Merit Commission specifically so that they could continue to do their action while we seated a new member. And so I think we made offers to four additional employees. That's four patrol officers. I think we hired some civilians as well since then, and we're working on filling those gaps. You know, it's always a struggle and something that we're constantly looking at of, you know, whether our compensation is adequately competitive or if there are other factors that we can do to make sure that we are an attractive place to be an employer.
Well, are we going to blame the sheriff's office dysfunction on the loss of those employees?
I think overall, I think we have been delivering a quality service to the public. I think there have been some internal issues that we've discussed at length and things that I think we're already making a lot of progress on addressing. And I think you're seeing that in that the sheriff's office numbers are coming back up, you know, the people who have been unhappy with things and left mm-hmm. that way. You know, I think we're able to replace them, and that's what we're proposing right now is actually adding more. So nine additional positions above the existing ones that doesn't account for filling those previous vacancies.
Okay. Anything else on the budget you want to mention?
No, I think so. There has been maybe a little bit of confusion for the public about some of our transit. I think it's important to reiterate for the public that our transit is paid for through sales taxes, and that at least half of those sales taxes are paid by visitors. And so there have been a few numbers thrown around, but we pay in total about $5 million for our transit services, and that's split across our fixed bus route and our microtransit service. And so I expect transit may be a topic that we'll end up discussing with the council today. I know there's been a few questions about that because of some of that confusion.
Okay. The clerk's website says more than 200 ballots are left to count. Any idea why there's such a lag to get updated numbers in Wasatch County?
You know, I don't know that we had that number right after the election. I know that they've been working on some curing process. I think my impression that they have is that they're hoping to be able to cure as many of those as possible before bringing out new numbers. I know that they have made some progress on it, but they haven't announced specifically what that looks like yet.
All right. Let's see. What are the next steps with the home building program? The county attorney sounded hesitant to use a legislative development agreement to rezone the property that these students would like to use for new projects. Is that because of the Temple project lawsuit?
No, I think it's overall a desire to ensure that anything we do, we're doing for the right reason. So this project is, you know, adjacent to the Timpanogos Middle School out on the east side of Heber City. It's actually an unincorporated Wasatch County. The school district owns property adjacent to that and would like to build houses using their high school students program that would become affordable housing for teachers and essential employees of the school district. I think overall the council's feedback from our presentation last week from the school district and their partners was positive, that the council is supportive. The concern is overall that this is a higher density than is typically allowed in those areas. But we feel like there are enough unique things about the proposed development that could warrant a legislative development agreement. It's more of how do we ensure that, you know, if somebody else comes knocking and wants a similar deal, that we would have to ensure that they would meet those same standards. So that this would not be, I think, something we would be entertaining for any kind of regular for-profit market rate, you know, development that didn't include this education component as well.
Right. So that may be kind of your out here in allowing that just because it is for education and then there's no profit involved, right? It's not like a developer trying to make more money because he gets more units.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think overall the concern that we've had, because we've discussed this before as well, is, you know, whether it makes sense to be in this unincorporated portion of Wasatch County. It's adjacent to Heber City and very close. And so we've talked about a number of options of what this could or should look like. And I think overall, we're optimistic that proceeding with the current plan is maybe the best course of action.
Okay, moving on to a MIDA update. What about the Marina West? When's that scheduled to come online?
We have a DRC meeting today. I don't believe that's on the agenda. I know it's a high priority for the project area because it includes some essential workforce housing. There's a lot of things moving, and I expect them to come back very soon with some. I know that they have been doing some work there. Associated with that is a development of a parks and recreation area. We've been working with MIDA on our partnership on them with that specifically of what that planned recreation component looks like that would cap some of those tailing ponds up on that intersection.
Mm. Okay. What roads are being planned to link East Village with the Marina West, the reservoir side of US 40?
So there's actually already a connection on that south side. The south portal connects from kind of the frontage road along the west side of Highway 40. You can actually get under I-15 and connect over to drive into the marina. So this road, anyone can drive on it now, and I think it will be an essential part of how we ensure that people can circulate around that area and not actually have to go through the Mayflower interchange unless they're planning to go on or off the freeway there.
Hmm, okay. Let's see, the MIDA tax sharing agreement only applies to property taxes. So what's the outlook now for transit room tax and sales taxes with East Village expanding this winter?
Yeah, so we're budgeting to receive over $425,000 from MIDA in the direct revenues from them. Our partnership with them does include some sales taxes as well. The first hotel that will collect transient room tax is the Hilton Canopy that we're expecting to open, mid this next year. And I think we're expecting a lot of growth and development. By the end of this next year, the Sky Ridge Hotel should be open up. We expect that to really impact us in 2027. And then there are other developments. The transient room tax that we get in that area actually comes from a lot of the short-term rentals. And so we have seen some modest growth in those. In years past, we've seen a lot more aggressive growth, but I know kind of regionally we've been dealing with maybe a little bit of a slowdown in some of those growth rates.
Mm-hmm. So is MIDA also taking a portion of the sales and transient room taxes?
It's complicated. There's not really a straightforward. So yes, part of it is that MIDA is able to assess taxes that the county would not be eligible to because they act similar to a municipality. Mm-hmm. So there is a portion of sales taxes like municipal energy taxes that MIDA assesses that the county could not, but that you actually remit those to the county. So on certain areas, they collect the local option portion of the sales taxes. So sales taxes are generally the point of sale where you buy something. The entity in which that transaction takes place gets a portion of those taxes. There's also a redistributed portion, and this is all statewide. This is not MIDA specific. That's just generally how sales taxes work. So, and then if you layer on top of that, the MIDA specific deals, basically there are portions of the sales taxes that they collect. There are portions that they remit to the county. And overall, I think the county views this as there's a lot of potential upside, particularly as the commercial area up there ends up coming online. I think we hope to end out much further ahead than where we would have been without our partnership with MIDA.
Okay, God, we should have a look at their budget because it just seems, from property taxes, sales taxes, or transit room taxes, it's pretty enormous what's being collected. Again, yeah. for an appointed board as opposed to an elected council.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting, though, they have an appointed board of elected officials. So, there's a lot of I think, insight from state and other local officials on that board.
All right. Dustin, anything else that you wanted to mention?
No, not this morning.
All right. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
The annual Park City Board of Realtors Turkey Drive kicks off this weekend in the studio. With details, I have event organizers and realtors Jenna Lee Jacobson along with Graham Harder. Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Good morning.
So what have we got going here? The 24th annual?
Correct. It is our 24th year of doing the Park City Turkey Drive. And yeah, we're super excited. This is the Park City Board of Realtors' largest philanthropic foundation, and we are happy to be a part of it.
Okay. Maybe tell us what the Realtors Foundation is.
Oh, gosh. it's the philanthropic foundation, which we have multiple divisions within the real estate market, I guess, in the real estate Park City Board of Realtors, where they do philanthropic things. This happens to be one of them, and it's the largest fundraiser that we do.
Yeah. So how is the foundation funded? Just with realtor contributions?
Sorry. Absolutely. So no, it's actually a very large community effort. We have gone to many partners that are kind of in that real estate world, developers, builders, property managers, such like that. And we have asked them to sponsor a portion of this. So that's where a lot of our money comes from to pay for the turkeys. And the rest of it comes from the community, much of which is the real estate community. But every year we're out at the market and we get people who just come in every year and hand us, you know, a large pocket of cash and say, you know, we look forward to doing this every year.
All right. I know with the realtors, you have your annual luncheon coming up. That's where the realtors actually kind of help that out.
Yeah, that's correct. We have that coming up this Thursday. What's also great about that is we get a state of the snowpack, if you will, although right now the lack of snow and really giving us an insight of this upcoming winter. But it also gives us a great platform to kind of share, an update of the turkey drive and our goals for this year. This year being our biggest, 4,000 turkeys is our goal. It gives us a great opportunity to share it with the realtor community and offer them an opportunity to put forward some contributions.
Okay. So is that the easiest for you then, for people just to contribute as opposed to dropping off a turkey? And
that's correct. What we're actually looking for. So we are fortunate enough to partner with the market here in town. Big shout out to them. Without them, we wouldn't be able to do this. So we actually go ahead and pre-purchase all the turkeys. So at this point, we are just looking for monetary donations, and we would love for people to swing by the market, this Thursday or Friday when we're out there and say hello, hang out for a little bit, learn a little bit more about this great program that we're doing, and hopefully put forward some contributions.
Okay. So the turkey drive itself, that's happening this week, when and where?
Correct. So we start on Wednesday. We have a little launch party that will be over in Prospector at the ATI building, which is a newer facility. It's fabulous. So we have a cocktail party there. And then Thursday and Friday from 10 to 5, we'll be at the Park City, or the market at Park City. And we'll just be out front collecting money and, you know, saying hi to everybody who comes by, whatnot. And then also on Thursday is when we do that luncheon with the Park City Board of Realtors as well. And so just also, we have to order these turkeys back in, you know, in March. And so we had a lofty goal. Last year we had 3,200 roughly. And so we said, you know what, we feel like we can do more this year, which we raised to 4,000. And because of all the things that's going on with the government shutdown and whatnot, we could go a lot higher. Unfortunately, we are not able to find any more turkeys. But what we need to do is raise the money to pay for those. So even though we have committed to those 4,000 turkeys, we're now raising the money to pay for them.
Okay, so how much do you need to raise?
We don't ever really know because the market pricing changes, of course, but it's about $100,000.
Wow, okay. And it's not just turkeys. I mean, you do hope to provide, the fixings as well.
Exactly, so fixings as well.
Okay, so where do 4,000 turkeys end up? I mean, we've only got 8,500 people in Park City. I mean, of course, more in the Snowdonia Basin, but yeah.
Yeah, of course. So we start local, and our biggest contribution is to the Christian Center. And they, you know, they needed more this year as well. So luckily, because we raised from 3,200 to 4,000. We were able to give them a good portion of that. But each of our partners that we've worked with for years have asked, basically about a 40% increase in what each of them wanted. We weren't able to do that for everybody, but we were able to give them each more. So almost half of them do stay in Park City or the surrounding area, Park City and Heber and Colville and stuff like that. And the rest go elsewhere. So Tabitha's Way is kind of in central Utah. They service a lot of the military and other types of people like that. Sorry. And as well as other Christian communities, so or Christian and Catholic. So there's the Catholic community that is also part of that, and they're in Ogden. So there's within the couple of hours of Park City.
All right. So if people aren't at the market Thursday or Friday, can they still contribute online, or how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a Venmo, a website, a number of kind of electronic sources, if you will, to collect those donations. And yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and since it was run through the foundation, it's a charitable contribution?
That's correct. We're 501(c). And so we, you know, those are tax deductible. So we'll be happy to provide receipts for everybody and the ability to write those off.
Yeah. Every penny that we raise goes towards it. So, you know, all of the people who are on the committee, which there are 11 of us, and we, you know, this is all, you know, we do this from the bottom of our hearts.
Yeah. Now, you've always done it with the market as a partner. I mean, what's their role in it?
They're so wonderful. Big shout out to Walt and to Mike. They actually give us a great discount. They pretty much do this for free almost. They charge us their wholesale price and then pass that along to us.
And where does 4,000 turkeys get stored?
That's a Walt question.
Yeah.
They start arriving, I believe, tomorrow. And so, yeah, they take up every single square inch in the fridge, in freezers, I should say.
Okay. The website is, do you have your own, I think, Park City?
Yes, parkcityturkeydrive.info.
Okay. Anything else that people need to know about the annual turkey drive?
No, just please come by and support us. We love to see people Thursday and Friday, and hopefully we'll have some nice weather, or maybe we want it to not be nice weather. I think that's really, we'd rather have bad
the
weather.
Snow, but
yeah, please come by or go to the website and donate there.
Okay, Jenilee and Graham, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Park City Mountain will not open Friday for the upcoming season as originally scheduled. The resort's waiting on the weather to confirm a new opening date. Low snowfall and mild temperatures have foiled the resort's planned opening day. Park City Mountain spokesperson John Kennelly says that they hope to open as soon as possible.
So despite the best efforts from really the entire Park City Mountain team, who really have been gearing up all summer to welcome guests back to the slopes, fortunately, Mother Nature decided just not to cooperate.
The resort has not settled on a new opening date. Kennelly says they'll have an update as soon as possible, and he thanked resort snowmaking crews for their efforts so far.
Our team is keeping a close eye on the forecast, and we're watching for that perfect snowmaking window.
Utah saw its wettest October ever recorded this year, but it was all rain. November hasn't been cold enough for snow. A weekend storm system was expected to change that, but only left a light dusting at the upper elevations. Now, the National Weather Service says Park City's highs will hover in the 40s for the rest of the week. ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes says to expect more precipitation this week, but only minor amounts here in the Wasatch Back.
Again, these storms are favoring southern Utah with the heavier precipitation and the big-time snow accumulations.
Solitude has delayed its opening until Thanksgiving. Brian Head and Alta plan to open on Friday. Woodward Park City's Hot Laps Lift starts spinning November 28th, followed by Deer Valley's Resort, scheduled opening November 29th for pass holders and December 1st for the public. Well, Park City and Deer Valley plan to collaborate on a new 900-spot parking and transportation facility. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the council will discuss its agreement with the resort tonight.
2 years ago, Park City and Deer Valley signed a non-binding letter of intent. It paved the way for the resort to redevelop Snow Park as a ski-in, ski-out village, along with a $15 million commitment from Deer Valley to help pay for a new transportation facility along State Route 248. The resort also agreed to build a gondola connecting Snow Park and East Village. At the Park City Council meeting Tuesday, leaders will consider whether to move forward with a project partnership agreement with Deer Valley to make the transportation facility a reality. City Attorney Margaret Plain said the agreement envisions a 50-50 split of the construction costs.
That letter of intent outlined Deer Valley's commitment to contribute up to $15 million if it's also matched by the city for a regionally significant transportation facility.
The agreement targets 900 new parking spaces. Affordable housing is also an option under the 2023 letter of intent as a secondary use, with 50 bedrooms if there's a parking structure and 100 bedrooms if it's surface lots. If constructed, the housing isn't required to be at the same location as the parking. The transportation facility would likely be built along State Route 248, according to Plain.
The project partnership agreement specifies that the parking needs to be within Park City boundaries. Council has heard from the transportation teams and others several times over the last year, looking at Richardson Flat and Gordo, but the agreement doesn't bind council to those options.
The city will own the facility and Deer Valley will be entitled to a share of the parking.
Once a project is approved, the city and Deer Valley need to mutually agree on how the facility will be operated and managed.
The resort is required to finalize the project partnership agreement with the city before starting work on Snow Park. The Park City Council meeting begins at 4:40 on Tuesday. For the agenda and a link to attend online, visit kpcw.org. Park City Municipal and Deer Valley Resort are financial supporters of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, the Summit County Council has approved an employment contract for Robert Parrish, who will succeed the retiring Dana Jones as director of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District. Following a national search, Parrish was selected. He brings extensive experience from the National Park Service, where he served in senior leadership roles, including most recently as chief of planning, environment, and projects at Grand Canyon National Park. He's also a U.S. Marine Corps veteran.
My career with the Park Service has spent a lot of time on historic preservation. I was 5.5 years at the Statue of Liberty in Ellis Island working on Hurricane Sandy recovery, but I've had projects across the nation with the National Park Service, a lot of capital investment, and really focus on visitor use, a lot of which will be applicable to Basin as we have an eye towards growth in the future.
Parrish resigned from the Park Service 3 days into the federal government shutdown in early October. He officially started with Basin Recreation last week, and he's relocating from Flagstaff, Arizona to the Park City area this week. He says he's eager to bring his leadership and strategic planning experience to the community.
I've been looking for an opportunity to where I can be a leader of a team that is in an area that experiences a lot of growth. It also allows me to kind of reduce the focus of my scope. Instead of being more on a national level, being able to focus on a smaller area like Basin, where, you know, the customers really are the residents of the county, and that be more of a local interest rather than a national interest.
As Parrish transitions into the role, the district's proposing a 15% budget increase to keep up with the increased demand. Jones says the public hearing is scheduled for the Summit County Council meeting on December 3rd at 6 p.m. at the Richens Building.
Doesn't mean your taxes are going to go up 15%. It means the portion of your taxes that go to Basin Recreation will go up 15%. So on an average home in the Basin, it's probably, let's say you have a house that's worth $1 million, your taxes will go up about $35 a year.
Jones notes the additional revenue would be used to maintain and update existing amenities, not to build new facilities.
If we are going to be building a new facility, which that could be on the horizon, and Rob has got some great skills to be able to make those things happen, that would probably have to include some bonding. So that would be something that potentially Basin would look at next year.
If the tax increase is approved, the district plans to update one of the playgrounds and replace the skate park at Trailside with a more versatile multi-use wheels park. Jones's contract with Basin Recreation ends in December. She plans to embark on a year-long boat journey known as the Great Loop with a friend in the new year. And joining me now in the studio with an update from Recycle Utah, I have Operations Director Troy Holding, along with Community Outreach Manager Chelsea Hafer. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see, who can tell us what's the latest about finding a new executive director for Recycle Utah?
So we have made it through a couple of rounds. They've narrowed it down to 3 final candidates. So we are hoping that within the next 2 weeks, we'll be able to announce who that will be. And that's where they're currently at.
Okay. I know that your board chair, Ken Barfield, was very excited just about the expertise that you had.
Yes, we've been super fortunate that they thought they were going to have to do a nationwide search, and they ended up doing it independently and locally, and we found 3 local candidates that they were very excited about.
Good. Let's see, what's the latest on the 4 acres that's been donated to Recycle Utah?
Yep, so the city and the county sent the contract over. We are currently just you know, ironing through the details with our lawyers, and hopefully within the next week or two, we'll be able to sign that, send it back. It seems like everything that we had questions about, the city and the county felt comfortable with, and so we should be moving forward with it.
Okay. So at this point, it hasn't been officially accepted by Recycle Utah to take over ownership, huh? Or is that what it is? Do we know if it's a lease or...
It'll be like a lease-to-own opportunity for us. There will kind of be like a proof of concept on our end that we will need to show that we are going to be operating a recycling facility there before the land is turned over to us, yes.
All right. And kind of looking out into the future, I mean, have you started with any plans, I mean, about what that might look like out there?
Yes. So we've been doing some site walks. We've been working with an architect and a developer as well. We are trying to get kind of a number on what the structure itself will cost, because we do realize we're going to need to launch a capital campaign. And so we're trying to come out with a number that we can present to the community, that's something that's attainable as well.
Yeah. So is that the plan, just one large structure with all of the bins? And
that's probably the most cost-effective way, is to do a large prefab building. Again, we don't need this to be the Taj Mahal. We just want this to be purpose-built, and also build it so that it can last the next, you know, at least 30 years, the same as we've operated in the current site.
Yeah, and what do you anticipate that the public will see as the biggest difference in the new location as opposed, I mean, other than being, having a place to turn around?
So the focus is going to be to continue the community feel. So when you come in, it's going to have the same vibe as it currently does. But on the back end, we're going to start going a lot more after the commercial diversion. So we may have like the Ace and the Republics bringing in material to the new facility. So that'll help with countywide diversion.
So as opposed to what they're doing now is what? Just hauling it on their own?
Yep. So currently they're hauling it all the way down to Salt Lake. And so we may be able to build a facility up here where they're not having to drive trucks up and down the canyon. So the cost savings will, you know, downstream help the city and the county.
Ah, so would you have some sort of sorting facility there at the new center then?
Yes. So we've been looking at equipment. It won't be anything like what they have in Salt Lake where they've, you know, invested the $20 million. But over the last couple months, I've been working on those relationships with the MRFs down in Salt Lake so that we can do some sorting up here, pull things like cardboard, tin, aluminum, and then we'll look at some plastics, and then partner with the MRFs down in Salt Lake to send them a commingled bale that's been far more consolidated than in a trash truck. So again, saving money on that side as well.
Yeah, so right now, it's the current center basically just serves residents, yeah?
Correct, yep. And if the smaller commercials want to come in with their material pre-sorted, we'll take that as well.
Okay. Also, in terms of landfill diversion, of course, we keep hearing about this. You know, we've got the zero food waste movement, because we know that the cell is filling up, and we don't, you know, it's a finite amount. How do you think that this will help that eventually with increasing that 12% diversion rate?
Yeah, we believe conservatively we should be able to double it at least with this new facility. So get that number. I mean, we're hoping to get to 30% at least. That's the goal. There's a lot of opportunities that we're missing out on right now.
Yeah. Is that hard to do given the, you know, the second homeowners, tourists that come to town?
It's not going to happen overnight, but, you know, we've been working really closely with a plan with the county specifically. So I believe that it's attainable for sure.
All right. And the plan is still to be out of the current center, what, June 30?
Possibly. Hmm. Let's see how quickly we can erect a building and get the equipment and everything in there. But we do have a really good relationship with the city, and so I don't think that they want to see us be homeless. So while they're not going to extend our lease indefinitely, you know, I think if we're under construction and there's the intent to build, there might be some flexibility, although they haven't come out formally. But just from the conversations we've had, it doesn't seem like the city really does want to help us out.
Okay. So it should be seamless. I mean, is that what you're hoping for?
Yeah, we sure are.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So that at least once that's gone away and at Woodbine, that there'd be something to go to.
Yep, exactly.
All right. Let's see. Anything else you want to tell me about the new location?
Nothing other than we're just really excited for all the opportunity that's going to come along with it. you know, being able to manage our own material, things that we're able to do now in the future will be really big for Recycle Utah and keeping the value of that material up here in Park City.
Yeah, what do you anticipate that you'd be collecting that you aren't collecting now?
I mean, most of the material that, you know, the residents are bringing in will be the same, but, you know, like we might be able to expand on food waste and we may even be able to do yard waste in the future.
Great. Chelsea, let's move to you. The holidays are coming, and maybe talk to us a little bit about the best practices at Recycle Utah during the holiday season.
Yeah, so we're really busy during the holidays. We're going to have a few closures coming up. We're closed on Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and then also New Year's Day. And we get pretty busy, so if people are able to bring their material to us earlier rather than later, that week between the 22nd and the 30th of December is really busy for us, so there might be a line. If you can hold on to your material for longer, then that would be a great option. In terms of sustainability, you can use newspaper as wrapping paper as you're wrapping your gifts, and make sure that you bring all of your food waste to us if you aren't having your food waste collected at home. Yeah, that's about it for holiday sustainability. We'll do more updates next month.
Okay. So food waste, you are collecting food waste at this point?
Yes. Yeah, we've been collecting food waste for over a month now, and it started picking up. We've been having a lot of pumpkins dropped off at Recycle Utah. So, yeah, that's through our partnership with the Community Foundation. They're covering the cost of our food waste collection.
Yeah, and how do you keep it safe, I guess, you know, from vermin and... You know,
it's
sort of...
only open during when we're open, so it's locked after hours, and so it's manned, it's staffed to make sure that people aren't dumping non-food waste items in our food waste bins.
All right, and again, anything that is edible is
anything. Edible? Yeah, the same rules that go for the zero food waste collection. It's going to the same place. So anything that's edible that includes oil, meat, bread, dairy. Things that you might not typically think of as backyard compostable. Even like light paper towels, as long as we're not doing like a ton of compostable cups or something like that. Anything that is edible or part of food is good to go in those bins.
Okay. Let's see. You've been without an executive director for a couple of months. So how is that working? I mean, who's in charge?
All of us have been picking up the slack. Our board has been really wonderful. They've been picking up a lot of slack. We have a board committee working on the search for the executive director, and they've been really wonderful and very involved. We have a board committee working on the architecture and plans for the site. So some of our board members are working with the developer and architect for Lot 4. They were really helpful with LiveGive. They've been volunteering at the center. They've been contacting donors. They've been really involved, so we are very grateful to our board.
Okay. Let's see. Any upcoming events? I know you got trivia tonight.
We do have trivia tonight. We have trivia tonight at Park City Brewing at 6:30. And if people want to attend, I'd recommend getting there around 6, 6:15, so you can make sure you get a table. We also did just wrap up our community cleanup season, and so we got the final numbers for that this week. We had 48 different community cleanups from the spring until now, and it's estimated that our volunteers picked up over 29 tons of trash from around the community in the last 6-7 months. So, yeah, just a shout out and a thank you to all of those people who have been involved. It really makes a difference around our community. If you've seen those orange bags on the sides of the roads, that was likely the Recycle Utah volunteers. So thank you to all of them.
Okay. Anything else, guys?
I will just put out, we have a few board members who are going to be terming out this year. So if anyone is very excited about Recycle Utah and our future and interested in joining our board, you can stop by the center and come talk to us.
Okay. Lots going on, that's for sure. Okay. Hey, Chelsea Hafer and Troy Holding, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Well, Deer Valley aims to open an expanded East Village terrain the week of December 22nd, weather permitting. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more.
Deer Valley Resort plans to open to season pass holders November 29th and to the public December 1st, if the weather cooperates. This season, the resort plans to debut 7 new lifts and 80 new ski runs as part of its massive East Village terrain expansion. Extel executive Kurt Krieg said Deer Valley plans to open the new terrain to the public just before Christmas.
Even with this weather, they're planning to open the entire expansion, hopefully the week of December 22nd.
Krieg's comments came at a Military Installation Development Authority board meeting Monday. MIDA is the land use authority facilitating the development of East Village, and Extel is the developer. Krieg said workers are getting the new lifts and snowmaking systems ready to welcome skiers next month. The Wasatch Back is waiting on the weather to start the 2025-26 ski season. Warm temperatures and scant snowfall have forced multiple resorts to delay their opening days.
That's Grace Dorfler reporting.